Hello, I'm Chris Fleischer, and welcome to Turning of the Wheel, an intelligent, lively discussion on astrology, art, and adventure. Timing is everything, and as the great wheel turns, we are best prepared when we are best informed. Join me as I explore the current planetary alignments and offer insights for coping with change. Educational, informative, enlightening, the Turning of the Wheel is a welcome pause in your daily swirl of constant change. Through intelligent discourse, inspired guests, and educational segments, I will help to enlighten your knowledge of astrology and guide you to accept change as the great wheel of life turns. Call in with your questions and speak with some of the greatest visionaries in the time-tested practice of astrology. Turning of the Wheel, Astrology, Art, and Adventure with Chris Fleischer, each Thursday, live, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, on Contact Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Turning of the Wheel. My name is Chris Fleischer, and this is a great show on Contact Talk Radio. It's a show about astrology, art, and spiritual adventure. And, you know, astrology in particular is one of my favorite topics, always has been. I'm a professional astrologer. And astrology is really about timing. It's about timing. It's about place. It's about, seasons and cycles and how they all interrelate. And at the forefront and at the basic basis of all of astrology is the concept of time. Where you were born at a specific place and time on the planet as the planet rotated around. So I thought it'd be interesting today to have a guest on to talk about the concept of time. And my guest is Michael Galileo, and he takes his name from the famous scientist Galileo, who formed the heliocentric, sun-centered form of the view of the world. He also invented the telescope, and he's the father of the observational astronomy. And Michael Galileo is my guest, and he has invented a clock that does things a little bit differently. And he's on the hold right now, so I'm going to get him on right away so I can get right into this topic, because I think it's going to take up some time to describe this and discuss this. Welcome to Turning of the Wheel, Michael.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Chris.
How are you?
Well, I am.
you are, as we all are. Yes,
that's
indeed.
Right.
Yes, yes.
So, the circumstances and conditions that caused me to be that way.
That's right, especially at this place and time. You know, time is a wonderful topic. I've always been fascinated by it because it's so elusive. You know, it has no way of really defining it. We, as people, have tried to construct a man-made format for recording that, and that has always been a format that we've referred to as the 24-hour clock or the wheel of, you know, the clock that we see every day. But that doesn't really reflect the way time is actually created or the way time actually appears. And what Michael has done, my guest, Ms. Michael Galileo, what he has done has created a clock that actually works differently. Now, Michael, could you explain your clock to us?
Well, the clock, and, you know, I'll be happy to explain the mechanics of the device, but I think it's more important to first address the purpose of the clock.
Absolutely, yeah.
The clock came to me as a way of bringing truth into this world. Once I had realized the dynamic that was occurring around us and how each moment was becoming the next and why each moment was becoming the next, and watching the results of many of the choices that have been made by humans that have civilized this world, to quote a phrase, I suppose, that could be debatable, but as we constructed our subjective reality, very often as we read in history and as we experience our day-to-day life, we realize that most often the results of what we try to create are not really what we would have wanted, and things don't turn out quite the way we would have liked them to.
Mm-hmm.
And I had earlier come to a realization that the universe really works for us because of our state of intelligence and self-awareness, and that the universe is, in fact, delivering to us everything that it is that we're asking for in every moment. And then I had also determined the nature of that. But when I put all those two things together and I realized, well, there's a dynamic that's working for us, yet the results that we generally manifest are of a lesser quality than what we would wish for in our dreams,
right?
To put it, you know, a simple way. And the reason for that is that we have wrong information, because if we had better information, we would make better choices and the results would be better. And through that deduction, I realized that one of the most confusing articles that exists in our world is the clock that we look at every day.
Absolutely.
That basically drives us, that has, through the process of evolution, come to control us and tell us what to do when. That I needed to try to break that cycle, and the realization of the fact that it's an earth turning and it happens in the opposite direction, and the time that we've been looking at is really just a subjective manifestation that has no relativity to anything.
Yeah, it's man-made. It's sort of a construct.
Excuse me?
I say it's a man-made construct, you know, sort of.
It's a man-made construct, and the concept, of course, is it's a joke, the clock at all, because time doesn't really exist, and that is the reality of it. Time and gravity are two man-made observations. They are, as I would say, different parts of the elephant, but there's only one elephant. There's one energy and there's one force causing everything to become the way that it does in every moment. And because of our objective point of view, we see that manifestation locally. When I say locally, I mean here where we see the world through our eyes. We see it manifesting as time and gravity. But it's actually an electromagnetic evolutionary current that causes everything to constantly attract and repel and become what they must based upon the collective nature of their properties at any moment.
Mm-hmm. So the idea of time and the process of it, that according to your clock, what Michael, I'm speaking to Michael Galileo, and he's the inventor of the real-time Earth clock. And what the real-time Earth clock does is actually go in the exact opposite direction of what conventional clocks operate. So we're talking about what we would call, even though it is perhaps, you know, opposite of what you would refer to, it is a counterclockwise moving clock, for lack of a better way.
Right. The Northern Hemisphere version of the clock, again, everything is relative, and that's part of the fun of all of this. If I were to try to explain this to the Hopi Indians, of course, they would think I was crazy, because they know that time doesn't really exist. All that exists is what was, what is, and what will be. And, you know, we apply a method of measurement to that and call it time. And since we've been doing that for about 20,000 years, and that's only as long as we've been doing it, which is a blink of an eye, actually.
Blink of an eye, yeah.
We've been doing it from an erroneous, self-centered point of view rather than an objective view of the entire universe.
Mm-hmm.
So the clock that I'm manifesting, yes, it shows that the actual dynamic of monitoring for a day, the rotation of the Earth back to the same point, which we use as the sun for that reference, that's 12 noon, and when we come back around to that point again, it's 12 noon again. In the Northern Hemisphere, that happens in a counterclockwise direction. In the Southern Hemisphere, it happens in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
So
that
would still go in a clockwise direction.
Now, you also bring in the concept of time with regard to speed and the rate of travel from which we go. And I want
right.
to touch on that briefly as well.
Okay. Well, this is where it gets really, really interesting. This is where you can begin to apply centuries-old metaphysical and alchemical properties to day-to-day life. And this is like the fun part of it for me, because where we are in the universe is about the middle. And I guess to kind of explain where I'm coming from with all this, I have to make a general statement, which is that at this point, and based upon all of my observations and everything that I've been able to discern, and based upon scientific evidence and all history, is that this universe is actually a closed system. It is not infinite in size in the way that we would think about it. It has two edges. It has a quantum edge down at Planck's length, which is named after Max Planck. And the best way I can explain that is if you went within the atom into the smallest particles of the atom and you went further and further down, you would eventually get to the point where scientists are talking about string theory or quantum loop theory, the beginning of all things that happen way down there before we have any idea that it's actually occurring.
So you do think the universe has a finite beginning and end?
Well, again, when my work works within our perceivable universe, which according to the Museum of Natural History, the Rose Planetarium, the observable universe goes from 10 to the negative 35th to 10 to the positive 26th. It goes from Planck's length to Big Bang. And we are approximately in the middle because, of course, we set up the measurement scale. So we're at 10 to the zero power. So the vibration that starts way down at 10 to the negative 35th eventually manifests itself here in the physical world where we realize it, where we live day by day in our world. And that's where the clock becomes fun, because once you understand that the entire system of time that man has used to measure all of our existence, we measure everything based upon years, the size of the universe, the length of our careers, how long we're going to live, how long we've been married, everything is based upon years. And once you realize that man is building a subjective reality based upon years, then you can realize atomically that a year is made up of individual seconds that are all the same size. A year is the amount of time that it takes for the Earth to travel around the sun. That's 584 million miles, and we travel approximately 1.6 million miles every day. Nobody really understands that, but we do. As Neil Young would say, it's a wonder tall trees aren't falling down. And that works out to be 18.5 miles a second. When you begin to see life as a compilation of a succession of seconds, each with an edge, each one being 18.5 miles long, you can then begin to see the code by which our world is constructed. If you live for 72 years, that's 2.25 billion seconds. But the universe only gives them to you one at a time. All of those future seconds are out there as potential energy. It's only by seeing the second that you are in, the 18.5 mile second that is the now, and the possibility that exists in that moment, can we make the choices that need to be made to cause the subsequent moments to become what it is that we'd like them to be.
So it is
you
about
follow that.
But yeah, I do. It's very much of a Zen sort of approach of being in the very present and making choices for the right thing. But you
yes,
know, within the construct of time, though, within the construct of time, we have to find some way. I mean, the reason time was invented is because there is a form of measure there. There is a form of there's a way to quantify that which is, how else would you record this? I mean, how else would you describe the passing of this thing called time if we didn't have time? And I think that it's fairly logical to think that the time that we use in our modern day world is based on the rotation of the Earth. That's a very natural correlation, right?
Well, you have a lot of it there, but it goes further in all directions. The concept of time was created about 15 to 20,000 years ago by the Ice Age hunters. We had evolved from to the state of to become humans, and over time had migrated following herds for food and for other reasons. And about 15 to 20,000 years ago, we were smartened up enough to realize that certain herds would come by certain areas after a certain amount of moon phases. So we began then to coordinate to be able to trap the herds by counting moon phases. And that was the beginning of time as we knew it. It was created as a tool for man. Around 4,322 BC, the Egyptians created the first solar year because they noticed that every 365 days, the star Sirius would appear in the same place in the sky.
Right.
And then they created years for us. The time systems evolved based upon our need at the time. It got more accurate, but only as those accuracies were demanded by the evolving civilization. For all intents and purposes, as hunters and gatherers, we really don't need to know much more than seasons. Time of day is really not necessarily of importance to us. But when you have to start showing up to work in a factory, all of a sudden 8 in the morning and 5 in the afternoon becomes more important.
I could take exception to that because it is important to know when the sun's going to set. I mean, you can't if you're a hunter and gatherer and you're out in the middle of the plain and the sun is setting, you got to get back to your cave.
Right, but you don't need a watch to tell you that. If you're 100,
Bob Dylan would say, use the sun, right, or the moon, or whatever you find.
Right, you're watching the Earth rotate. You're getting a natural system of change. It's just a circadian circumstance, and your intuition and all of your cellular system is tuned into that properly. It's only when you put in the influence of machinery and incandescent light and things of that nature and an abstract version of time that you begin to create a subjective reality that insulates you from the natural world and begins to cause a separation that can cause confusion in certain
human beings. It can cause confusion, but think of it this way. There's nothing that we use in modern society that doesn't relate to time. It isn't related to time. The computers themselves alone, just by simple virtue, are all based on a clock.
Absolutely, and that's where the accuracies had to get even better. We couldn't have the computers, the technology that we have today, if we were still basing our time on the Earth going around the sun. We don't do that anymore. My clock is actually a throwback. We are now on atomic time or universal coordinated time, where time is actually kept pace by the vibration of the, I think it's the 18th electron in a cesium atom, which vibrates over 9 billion times in the 18 and a half miles that the Earth moves in that second, because those accuracies are demanded in order to have the digitalization and that we're having of our world today.
Yeah, no, I understand the reason, the rationale behind why we need the time today in order to get to factories and to get people on the trains on time and stuff like that. So it is a very logical and actually very successful system of keeping
mm-hmm,
things
absolutely.
Ordered and orderly. Because,
right.
You know, we have deadlines we've got to meet. We have, you know, the calendar. You've got to get to the train on time. You've got
absolutely.
Bills to pay. Those things all make sense. But
yep.
I think what you're getting into is how we perceive time and how that the influence of time has taken on a new weight in our lives, because even though it's man-made, it has become so pervasive that it really dictates the way we live as opposed to us dictating it, right?
It controls us. It has become, to quote a phrase, you could say it's become evil to a certain degree, because it causes so much confusion that the natural world is abstract. What I would like to say about my work is I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with time. I think that time is very useful, and what I'm trying to do is use it in a way that is a little bit more user-friendly.
Organic, perhaps, yeah.
Yeah, once you see that, it's not just the concept of time itself, but it's the concept of each second becoming the next. And each second, see, no one has ever quantified the now. When I've been a seeker my whole life, that's how I've come to this, these understandings. And the now is something that has always been esoteric, and it's always been hard to nail down. And everybody will say you have to be in the now. So what I'm doing is I'm trying to put time in such a way that we can identify the now. A second is 18 and a half miles long, and each second contains all of the information of all of the seconds before it. Are you familiar at all with the Fibonacci recurrent series of whole numbers?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Once you quantify a second as being 18 and a half miles long and having actual dimension and size, you can then apply the Fibonacci recurrent series of whole numbers concept to each second of your life to see what the value is at any moment based upon the quality of the choices that have been made in the moments before. I know that's without visuals, that's a little hard to
understand. Well, I think what you're saying, is you're talking about a very mechanical measurement and a very mechanical measurement of the passage of time through events and the types of choices that we make within those time frames. Leading into the next recurring second beyond that. So in other words, if we make a conscious decision at this moment in time to do something, we would see that manifest in the next second going forward.
Well, it's not that you would. You do. But what my work is showing is that life is not a road, it's a river. If life were a road, you could decide to make a choice or not. But since life is a river and it's constantly moving at 18 and a half miles a second, and each second is becoming the next based upon your choice or non-choice, you then begin to see the power of your awareness, your knowledge, and your application of action to the current second. To be able to take the possibility that exists within it to cause the current concurrent seconds to grow and be nurtured the way you want them to be.
Yes. So what you're talking about is that it's sort of like about intention. If you intend at this point in time to do something good in the next second, you will begin. You will see that manifest when you begin to do that goodness, and therefore you have free will over how to dictate the way that time goes. Correct?
Well, we could debate that a little bit, only because your free will is based upon what you think is best, and what you think is best is based upon the information and your intuition that you've experienced from the moment that you've arrived here, and genetically, and you could argue metaphysically and spiritually, all the way back to the beginning of the universe,
religious overtones that get added to it too, and social mores and stuff like that. I understand that, but I'm not going to debate whether what's good or what's bad. I don't want to get down to that. But let's just say you have a thought about what you want to do, and you want to see that come to fruition. So you concentrate on that thought at this moment in time, and then as the time evolves, you are motivated and compelled towards that end, correct?
You are setting it up that way, but what's most important is your awareness of the possibility of the current moment, and you need to take action. They say the road to hell is paved with good intentions, if I can say that on the air.
Yeah, of course.
good intentions are fine, but you have to have more than intention. Once you realize that each second is coming at you, that you don't even have to go anywhere, you don't have to make anything happen, it's all coming towards you at 18 and a half miles a second, the question becomes, okay, what does the second that I'm in now contain that I can use in a certain way to cause the subsequent seconds to become more like I'd like them to? It's the basis of martial arts and kung fu, seeing things coming at you, being aware of what their nature is and how they're going to respond, so that you can make a choice that requires minimal effort for you to succeed in your endeavor.
See, this is exactly what I'm preaching. I'm always talking about the idea, well, preaching is not the right word, but I'm always talking about the idea of being forewarned is being forearmed, which is why
Absolutely.
I think astrology is a very valuable divination tool, because it allows us to sort of watch for repeated patterns within the universe.
Absolutely. It's like reading the river. I used to do a lot of canoeing with my sons as they were growing up, and we would be out in the canoe, and once you realize that life is a river, it's about being able to see the rocks, even if they're a little under the water. The rock may not be obvious, but if you understand how water moves around a slightly submerged rock, you'll be able to avoid that disaster. If you understand the currents, you can just put your rudder in such a way so you can get to the sandy beach, and you can avoid the rapids. You have to be, like you said, looking ahead, reading the river, and seeing the potential of the current moment in its proper way, and then having the courage to make the choices, to take the action, to cause the things to become the way that they can.
Now, but we base those decisions on what has happened to us in the past. So we've seen cycles and seasons and patterns develop in the past. We know that if we stick our finger in an electric socket, we get a jolt. And so these kind of things are learned over the course of time, so that we can, that's part of our memory bank that allows us to make informed decisions going forward, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so now...
memory, everything is in memory.
Yeah, so then we are drawing on the past in order to make the decisions of the future, even though we are in the present.
In man's terminology, yes. What is actually happening is it's just an accumulation of experience. And if you see each moment becoming the next, having a value based upon the total of all of the moments before it, within it, and the choice of that current moment, then you realize that the quality of your choices determines the quality of your experience, because that's what manifests itself.
Right. So the whole concept of a river is good. The river is a very good metaphor, I think, for the forward motion. And I think that river implies that you can't go upstream. I think that you're going with...
It's a lot of work.
Well, I mean, essentially, when you use the analogy of a road earlier, you can always have the free will to turn around the road and go back. We don't have that option time. We can only go one direction.
Absolutely, and you can't even sit down and take a rest like you can on a road.
Mm-hmm.
It's moving, and it's moving at 18 and a half miles a second. Now, that may sound fast, but once you realize that our entire solar system is moving around, swirling around the outer edge of the Milky Way galaxy, the entire solar system is moving at 256 miles a second.
Mm-hmm.
So, know, speed becomes really irrelevant, but what's important about it is the consistency of it. If you can understand that time is not subjective, it's not in a way that it's not going to go faster or slower, that is only a perception. Once it's kind of like throwing, I liken it to throwing a leg off the side of the bed if you've had too many cocktails and stop the spinning. It's like, okay, this is what's happening. Each second is 18 and a half miles long. Each second is becoming the next electromagnetic link, contains all of the information of the prior seconds, and is becoming what it has to become based upon the choices that are being made in the now. What it does is it gives a personal power and a personal responsibility to an individual that they would otherwise pass off to a deity in some way, shape, or form, and lose their own ability to control their reality in a real way.
Yeah. We're going to take a break in about a minute, so I don't want to get into this, my next question here, but I want to just let people know what we're talking about. My guest today is Michael Galileo. His website is www.galileorealtime.com. And what he does is he creates the real Earth clock, which is actually works the exact opposite of what we might think it does by going in reverse, but it actually mirrors the effect, well, from the Northern Hemisphere at least, and it mirrors the effect of what we are actually, the Earth is actually going through. So we're going to take a 2.5-minute break right here, right now. If you have any questions about this, feel free to call 1-877-230-3062. Again, my guest is Michael Galileo. His website is www.galileorealtime.com. We'll be back in about 2.5 minutes, rather.
What is your destiny? Where are you going? What is your real purpose? Do you know? Do you want to know? Of course you do. It's your duty to yourself. We are all here for a reason, and we all have great potential. Discover all of this and more with a professional astrology reading. My name is Chris Fisher, and I can help you. Discover your strengths and work on your weaknesses, and live your life to its fullest capacity. Based on your birthday, birthplace, and birth time, an authentic astrology reading will allow you to live your life to the fullest and reveal your true purpose. Only real astrology can give you real information. It is your destiny, and it is your path. Write me at chris@chrisflisher.com and book a reading today. Or call me, 978-264-0668. That's 978-264-0668. www.chrisflisher.com.
Want to get yourself out there? Host a show with Contact Talk Radio. Phone 425-649-1112 or email info@contacttalkradio.com.
As the world shrinks and our barriers come down, diverse cultures are striving for harmony, balance, and peace. To ease the transition, we need to expand with color, light, and tolerance. Now, you can become a global citizen and embrace the color and clear spirit with the divine artwork of the mandala. Mandalas are a timeless artistic offering for creating unity, harmony, and peace. My name is Chris Fisher, and I've spent years creating mandalas, and they are now available online at www.chrisfisher.com. Come and experience the world of color, form, and function with t-shirts, coffee mugs, note cards, and limited edition prints. These vibrant, lively paintings and products express optimism, oneness, and spiritual balance for all who use them. At www.chrisfisher.com, www.chrisfisher.com, and enter a world of possibility and color.
Hi, this is Dr. Wayne Dyer, and you're listening to Contact Radio.
Now is your chance to be part of the show. Call 877-230-3062. Call in with your questions or thoughts and talk with the host and their guest. Again, that number is 877-230-3062.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Turning of the Wheel. My name is Chris Fisher. This is a show about astrology, art, and spiritual adventure. And my guest today is Michael Galileo. He draws his roots from the famous Galileo. And his website is www.galileorealtime.com. And we're having a discussion about time. Since astrology is so tied in with time and placement and season patterns and cycles and recurrence of themes and ideas and energies, the topic of time is especially relevant and very much of a tangent of what it means to be part of astrology and part of understanding our soul purpose here. Now, before we took a break, we were talking about the concept of sort of being in the now. And my guest is Michael Galileo, as I mentioned before. And Michael, when you talk about being in the here and now, you're referring to this split second that we just are right now, and there's nothing else that we can talk about. How do you, if that is sort of the process from which we are sort of basing this theory of time, how do we therefore plan ahead, so to speak? How do we, if we're thinking about right now, how do we say, gee, next year I'm going to do this, when we're not really knowing that what's going to be there?
Well, we base all of our plans on assumptions.
Right.
We assume when we get up in the morning, I would say that probably 99% of the listeners, before they get out of bed, don't bother to look down to see if the floor is still there from the night before.
Right.
They just assume that the floor is there, and they put their feet down, and they begin to go about their day. So there are a certain amount of assumptions that can be made, and actually, the work that I'm doing is making it easier for you to plan your day or your week or your year or your life. But what's key about it is being able to not only plan it, but affect it and then look at the results. Because each moment, we're more or less getting the feedback for the quality of our choices and our endeavor. Each second is 8.5 miles long, and if you can see that and see that and understand that you're going to get subsequent seconds, like I said before, Chris, it kind of comes back to the fact that if you're going to have an assumption and an expectation of having a life that's going to last approximately 70 to 72 years, and we all know that there are variances to that no matter what, some are shorter and some are longer, mm-hmm. but if you can say rationally that, all right, if I'm going to be here for 70 or 72 years, I want to accomplish certain things in my life, and we set about trying to do that. What my work is doing is giving us a look at the atomic structure of our day-to-day life as we experience it. When I say atomic structure, I don't just mean the matterist forms. I mean the atomic and molecular components of our relationships. The individual personality traits, the physical attributes, all these things add up to create the world that we experience in every day.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to do is allow people to see the schematic by which the next day and the day after that is created. Now, time, of course, like the universe, it has varying levels and degrees. We have a year, we have a week, you know, a month, we have a week, we have a day, we have an hour, we have a minute, we have seconds, and now, of course, we have nanoseconds and smaller graduations of time. But the reason I chose a second was that I like to use an explanation of, like, take a table. You may be sitting at a table while we're speaking, and if you look at that table is just the way that it is because every atom of matter within that table is exactly the way that it is. If even one atom were to be different than it is, that table would be different than it is, albeit not noticeable to the human perspective, but if you were to change a few more of those atoms, eventually you would the change would be noticeable. The mm-hmm. difference would be noticeable. So by taking time and breaking it down into 18.5 mile long seconds and seeing each one as the now and separate from the one before it and the one after it, like snowflakes, they're all of the same source, but every one is different. If you can use all of your senses and use all of your being to be able to, through your intuition and through your life experience, understand the possibilities to your greatest level that exist in that particular second, just like we were talking before about being able to read the river, you kind of have an idea of what some of the future seconds are going to contain and what they're going to look like. And it's about planning ahead on how you're going to affect things between now and then to become more the way you want them to. And like I said, breaking down the seconds into 18.5 mile nows is very compelling. And that's also why I put the second hand on your clock. It's not necessary. We could just watch the Earth at any point in time where it is relative to the sun, and we could know what time it is based upon that clock without the second hand. But the second hand is compelling, and it's showing every time it ticks that this planet has moved another 18.5 miles. And just like a computer code is being written, the choice that you're making in this 18.5-mile-long second all add up at the end to eventually being... It's the computer code of your life choices, and therefore your daily life experience. There's really no other way to say it. That's what's happening here.
Yeah, no, I understand the Zen thread very clearly. I understand that it's more the mechanical thread of time and the measure of it is sort of baffling me. I'm sort of stuck on that, I guess. You know, you talk about 18.75 miles per second is the rate of speed at which the Earth is traveling, and therefore, since we are on the Earth, we are traveling at that same rate. So that your way of defining this is by saying, well, if you were to travel 18.75 miles in a second, you would have crossed X amount of land, or you would have crossed X amount of airspace or water or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that would be a accumulation of experience or stimuli by which you were able to, react within that time construct, right? Now, but that, as the Earth turns, that is a repeatable amount of time, because every second that ticks by, even from the time we started the show until now, it's been a repetition of that 18.75 miles. And you're saying that each second that ticks by holds the every second prior to it in it.
Yes.
So each second is more powerful and more historical than the second before.
Well, it contains more information. And everything really is just information, and it's accumulation of information, especially since man has put his hand into the creation aspect of things for the last 2.5 million years. What we're doing is what nature used to do in cycles over and over again, just around and around, of course, with the resulting changes that would come from the convergence of different elements as each moment became the next electromagnetically. But then once man put his mind to it and started making choices that were subjective of his own volition and creating this subjective world that we live in, we've changed the whole concept of that repetition of cycles, and we've turned it into a linear event. And I guess that's kind of what my work does. It's saying that if you're trying to construct a life, again, if you're living as an indigenous person and you're in nature only, and you have no need to make choices that are out of a daily ritual that has been done in your tribe for 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 years, you don't need this. But if you have to wake up in the Western world today in the year 2009, and you have to set about taking care of yourself and making choices that are going to cause the world around you to hopefully improve for yourself, as a carbon-based life form, we're looking for comfortability. So if your life is becoming less stressful and more enjoyable, well, then you're certainly making the right choices based upon the conditions that are available to you. Mm. But if it's not, then you're certainly not.
Well, people often make, operate, you can say operating with the best intentions. So people may operate with the best intentions, thinking that they're going to be creating a new world for themselves and that they're going to be moving forward because they said, well, I really want the world to be a better place, and so I'm going to act with good intention.
Uh-huh.
They act with good intention, that doesn't always come to fruition.
Yeah. How do they even know that their idea of what's a better world is a better world?
That's the philosophical question. Yeah, who the heck knows that? Who's the overriding power
here? Right, exactly. You actually, if we were to have a few more hours to talk about this and some visuals, we could get into the math of all that, because the electromagnetic current that causes each moment to become next in this universe. And I guess if we can touch briefly on that again, like I said, the universe it's been determined, and this is not just my point of view, this is the prevailing science at this point, that the universe is a closed system, and that closed system is being affected by, for lack of a better term, electromagnetic current that's generated by the cosmic microwave background, the quasars, and locally for us, the sun, that produces an energy that causes entities at that 10 to the negative 35th that I talked to you about, all the way down at the bottom of things, the beginning of things, causes that to ionize, which means an electron or a small particle moves, and therefore the things become polarized, and they begin to attract and repel. And that engine and that dynamic has been going on since the beginning of this universe in every moment, and each moment is just becoming the next. You know,
right.
along comes man 20,000 years ago and starts to apply a system of time to begin to construct a civilized world in the middle of that cosmic goo. And so we do need a system of time in order to do it, but what I've seen happening is that not only has the time become the controller, but from the time we're born, the world has become so subjective. It is so much opinion. We are so not of the natural world anymore that to find something that is truthful and not just an opinion is very difficult.
But couldn't you ascribe that to progress in some way? I mean, we have made progress. We are further evolved, and we spend our time doing things that we wouldn't have had to do. That we spend our time now doing things we wouldn't have done 10,000 years ago. So progress is good. We have made some progress here.
Again, that's a subjective. That would be
right.
A subjective judgment. I would say that we have changed things. I like ice cream. I like rock and roll. You know, I like being alive now as opposed to being chased down by woolly mammoths or whatever might have been around. I certainly agree with you. Again, I'm not saying any of this is good or bad.
No,
I'm just expressing how it has affected our human condition and what it's caused of us. We have metabolized all of that progress and become artificial beings. We used to be natural beings that existed solely out in nature, and now if you were to put one of us outside for 3 or 4 days, we're like a shrinky dink. We'd be dead.
Right. You know, we might also revert back to, I think people can revert back to their natural instinct, just the way, you know, a dog can be domesticated, and then when let loose in the street, he reverts back to his natural basic instincts. We probably would do the exact same thing at some point in time. You know, I mean,
right, absolutely. It's all still in us. It's everything that has happened from the beginning is all still in us. We still have our reptilian brain, we still have our mammalian brain, and then on top of that, we grew a human brain, and that causes all sorts of conflict right there, which religions and many other things try to deal with through moralization, you know, moralizing and things of that nature to help us keep our humanness separate from our past.
Yeah, I mean, you know, looking at time this way, I think is useful because it does allow us to sort of, it applies a different kind of construct to it. It allows us to be, to have a quantifiable way of measuring it in time and space where we can actually see it, I guess, is what you're coming down to. It's sort of
it's
a way
like
of actually looking
yeah,
at
it's like longitude. There were, a couple of hundred years ago, ships would get lost at sea and they would get wrecked on rocks and reefs because although they could track the latitude based upon the placement of the sun in the sky, they had a problem with longitude. And until the concept of time was made accurate enough to be able to track distances, the longitude problem wasn't solved. But once the longitude problem was solved, well, then all of a sudden ships started to be able to get where they wanted to go. Everybody prospered a lot more, and there was a lot less loss of life and limb. That's pretty much what I'm trying to do here.
Yeah, I understand the philosophy. Now, what about the concept of going against time? Supposing somebody's flying against the time zone because they're in an airplane and they're traveling back around the Earth before it happens.
Yeah. They're not actually traveling. They're traveling back in the monitor system.
But there is distance involved there, right? There's 18.75 miles for every second that
right.
they go the other direction. And they've got to make that up again, right?
Well, again, you have to separate time. Time is the man-made construct, but you may be going back in distance, but you're not going back in circumstances. Every second, if you realize that every second is 18 and a half miles long, and you can apply this all the way back now to the beginning of the universe, and realize that it contains what it does, and that is all. And I'm losing my point, Chris. I'm sorry on that.
No, I see what you're saying, though. But I think what you're saying is that it's cumulative. It's sort of like a giant memory bank where we just keep adding more and more and more information to it.
But absolutely. The idea,
Einstein spoke about this as well, because he talked about the idea of a fly flying around the inside of a car or a train or walking in a train, walking mm-hmm. backwards as the train goes forward. Mm-hmm. Are you actually going against time? Because if time is measured in distance, as it has been here, we are essentially going back in time, and we can't reverse that process.
Mm-hmm. You need to look at it differently. If you were to look at each second as a snowflake, every one before them were different, but they're different not illogically. They're different because of the circumstances and conditions of the metabolization of the elements of that moment cause it to be what it does. You see that it's just a constant accumulation of memory all the way back. Again, everything is being caused to be because of that electromagnetic current causing it to build from 10 to the negative 35th up to the world where we are. That's why the yin-yang symbol is black and white, because of that that current that causes that polarization, that causes the opposites, which causes the attract and repel, which drives the engine. And that has not stopped since the first moment of this universe. Mm-hmm. If the power were to go out, everything would disintegrate because it's only held together based upon that electromagnetic current. That's why when a black hole exists and it used to be a power source and now it is of less value than the things that it has created, the things then begin to fill that void. And since there is no current coming from there, they break down to their basic properties and then get re-ejected back out into the universe, where they are then affected by other quasars and stars and CMB that cause it to electromagnetically attract and become things again. Mm-hmm. And that's what time really is. It's just the constant metabolization of circumstances and conditions. So if we really wanted to go back in time, what you have to do is recreate exactly as they were the circumstances and conditions of everything. That's why
By that theory, since time is cumulative and we have all the knowledge and the history of what happened beforehand, why can't we go back?
Well, to a certain degree, you do. When you put on some music from when you were younger, that's one of the aspects that was there at that time.
Now,
if you could do that with everything, the kitchen floor, the clouds in the sky, the trees where they were, if you could do that, bring everything back, you know, reverse the current and cause it to, but that wouldn't happen. What happens is once the current stops, what has been built just disintegrates, just like when we are electrical beings. Our heart contains chemical nodes which produce an electrical current. And while we're alive, that current keeps us connected to everything, all of the other energy around us. Once that heart stops, that electrical current stops, we disintegrate, just like the rest of the universe.
Well, our frequency changes is what happens. We go from a different, when we die, I believe we go to a different frequency. I think we are still, our physical bodies operate at a certain frequency, like you mentioned earlier, like all things have a frequency to them. Some are very slow, some are very fast. I think that when we die, we just change our frequency, so therefore we vibrate so quickly and so fast that we're no longer visible.
Yeah, everything is a frequency. You're 100% right.
So with the idea of frequency and things and this at this vibration level, you would think that by the nature of this, and then you take the concept of video and movies and sort of and photographs, and so when you take a photograph, you essentially have captured a moment in time, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. An image of it.
Yeah, an image of that time. But you do capture, you can capture quite a bit in that time. You can capture emotion. You can capture any number of human characteristics or any natural occurrence for that matter within that time. And you can rewind that and you can go backwards.
Yep.
How is that? How does that apply to that? Is that sort of, you know, taking this giant tape? I mean, I think of this as like a giant tape in the old days when they used to have reel-to-reel tape recorders, and the reel is going forward, and all of a sudden you're running the reel backwards. You know what I'm saying? You're sort of getting what has happened back again.
Yeah, and you know, there. If you go back, not to get too deep into this, but if you go back to the concept of graven images, any kind of an image that would cause something to be confused would be something that would be considered evil and not helpful. I'm not saying that looking back at images is evil and not helpful, but the concept of nostalgia is actually a disease. The word nostalgia is representative of a problem, because one is desirous of the past as opposed to paying attention to the river ahead and making good choices so that life comes out more the way they want it to. That's why those images would be harmful to one.
But why wouldn't nostalgia be the same thing as being hopeful? Because supposing you say, gosh, I long for the past, or I'm hopeful for the future, I have this visualization of the future, those essentially have the same thing, because you're not really in either of those two places.
Exactly. What you're asking for are circumstances and conditions. You're not asking for either the past or the future. Those are just words that we as human beings use to describe circumstances and conditions that have already occurred, as opposed to circumstances and conditions that will be coming subsequently and consequently down the road.
But they're both
18.5 miles a second.
They're both intangible. You can't reach them. You can't reach either of them. But I guess
the only thing you have is the now.
Yeah, but what you're saying is that you have more control over what happens in the future by making choices in the present, as opposed to moaning what happened in the past or longing for the past.
Yeah, well, that depends upon your goals as an individual.
Right.
Depends upon what you want to accomplish.
Yeah, you would learn from the past, and learn from your mistakes of the past so that you made wise decisions going forward. And being in the here and now, is very much of a way in which I try to live, even though I'm a human being and I got all this chatter in my head like everybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
But being in the here and now is incredibly important to sort of express and enjoy and understand what it is now. But I also think that in that same concept, there's a piece of it that says, by being fully here and present now, does that not freeze you in the now and never let you look to the future?
Yeah, it's like a picture in a picture is the way I describe having to do it. You have to have the big picture and the small picture. You have to be able to move. You can, if your perspective is stuck inside of your body here at 10 to the zero power land, you're pretty much in trouble. Hopefully, and I'm sure most of your listeners are at the point where, they have tried to go beyond themselves and learn to have a larger perspective than just their own point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And the more of that you get, the better view you have of what can be done. So if you can take yourself outside and look at the big picture of where you are and where you want to be, just to keep an eye on where you are in the maze, and then, of course, one needs to focus from time to time on exactly what they're doing in the now in order to make sure that they're making those proper choices. It's like looking ahead in the river.
Yeah, it's very cool. I think the concept that you're talking about is very great. I do agree we could talk for quite some time about this. I just want to remind people who you are. Your name is Michael Galileo. He takes his name from the great Galileo. It's a pseudonym, but that doesn't matter. And his website is www.galileorealtime.com. And what Michael has done is he created a clock that actually operates counterclockwise from the northern hemisphere, and it actually reflects the motion of the Earth in the form of speed, so that each second is equal to 18.75 miles. So that's the speed at which the Earth travels. And so by presenting time in that format, we have a tangible way of sort of measuring it that's different. And therefore, by looking at time differently, we can sort of make better choices in the now here in that next 18.75 miles. So is that correct? Did I summarize that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Good, I'm a salesman now.
It's a one or a zero. Depends upon what you cause that second to be. It's creating
that's right, yeah,
code.
It's interesting. But, time has always been a fascinating subject to me, and I'd love to get you back on again to explore it further, because it really does bring up many, many issues about the choices that we make, which I think is a very appropriate way to approach time, because it does give us everybody has the option, and I think I use that example of martial arts all the time, about taking the energy that's coming towards you, harnessing it, and then putting it back out again so that it comes out with a positive income, positive outcome, as opposed to hopefully positive income too, for that matter.
Yeah.
A positive outcome that you have some control over, because it hasn't happened yet. So you would like to assume that you have that. But, you know, there's many possibilities, and I've often used the same concepts of, you know, what would happen tomorrow if the Atlantic Ocean were not there. And I do think like that. And so I've always used the concept of being open to possibilities, and that's kind of what this ties into. Anyway, we're out of time, unfortunately. My guest has been Michael Galileo. His website is www.galileorealtime.com, and he has the real-time Earth clock, which is for sale there. Very interesting kind of concept. I implore all of you to go out there and explore it further and see what it's all about, and perhaps give you an email and get some more information about this stuff. That you've got some great press materials up there that sort of go into greater detail than we have been able to just in the short 50 minutes here. But I appreciate you very much coming on, Michael, and it's been great to talk to you. It's a big topic. We could talk for hours, obviously. But
thanks again, Chris. Anytime.
We've done the best we could, and we've done what we could in this time. We'll have to get you back on, that's all.
We ran out of seconds.
Yeah, we're running out of seconds. There we go. Another 18.75 miles has just gone by.
There you go.
All right. Thanks very much, Michael. And, folks, be open to possibilities and tune in next week at another great show. My guest has been Michael Galileo, www.galileorealtime.com. Take care. See you next week.
You've been listening to Turning of the Wheel with your host, Chris Fisher. To schedule a reading with me or to order artwork, you may visit my website at www.chrisflisher.com. That's www.chrisflisher.com. Or email me, and you can call me at 508- 508-